Jacob Zuma's Umkhonto we Sizwe party will be on the ballot. They will be up for voting in the national elections on the 29th of May. After the African National Congress, the ANC lost an extremely highly publicized and dramatic court bid to get the MK party's registration struck completely from the voters' roll. And honestly, the ANC was put down pretty harsh by the courts. But that's not the only court case involving the ANC and the MK party. One of them is still ongoing, so we'll talk about that in a second. But we are also today going to be covering two more big news stories on News Worth Knowing. The second is that somehow, even though she's clearly going to be arrested, National Assembly Speaker and ANC stalwart Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula has not been arrested yet. And it's a really wild and just insane story. And we have to ask ourselves, are some people just lecker above the law and too powerful, or a bit above the law and maybe not quite powerful enough to get off, but powerful enough to do their own arrest in their own way, let's say. And the final story today is a really heartbreaking one. It involves one of South Africa's biggest providers of private education, higher education institutions, tertiary education. It's EduCorp. They're responsible for some famous private colleges that many students have gone to, the likes of Damelin and City Varsity and Lyceum colleges. They look set to close, to be forced to close by the government after committing a bunch of infractions, allegations of corruption, no provision of balance sheets or financial, you know, measures of their success over the last few years. And that really could throw the lives of hundreds of thousands of students into turmoil. So let's talk about it, because it's been a really, really big week. This is The Issue with Dan Corder, because we all know that South Africa is a movie. Welcome to the watch party. South Africa is wild and overwhelming, and on this show we explain, analyze, and understand the biggest news stories and issues facing this country every single week. Two episodes of The Issue come out every single week on podcast and also in video form on YouTube, and we also release weekly exclusive episodes of interviews and analysis on Patreon. Go find us there. Lastly, if you're new here and enjoy the episode, it would be so wonderful if you clicked subscribe or follow. It makes a huge difference as we develop the show going forward. Right, let's get into it. All right, let's start with, listen, these are all massively important stories for different reasons, but let's start with the MK party, Jacob Zuma. If you've been listening to this show or just following certain news articles or news outlets or people, you will know what an uproarious table flipping effect the MK party, Jacob Zuma's return to politics, has been for our country and for what's likely to happen in the national elections. In December, before Jacob Zuma stabbed the ANC in the back, ironically on the 16th, which is the day of reconciliation, in December, we were still talking about, will the ANC drop below 50%? Well, now you will struggle to find anybody who thinks that they will come close to 50%. Some major polls recently have predicted or forecast that they could get as low as 41 or 40% nationally. And the reason is Jacob Zuma's MK party, 100%. In fact, most of these polls suggest that Zuma's MK party could be said to be the fourth biggest party in the country on their debut, coming in between 8 and 10% of the national vote, which is absolutely insane, but shows you how much pull power and how much influence Jacob Zuma still has over our politics, even at 81 years old. So the ANC has been doing everything they can to stop Zuma, and it's not been going very well for the African National Congress. Again, if you've been listening to the show, you'll know how, to what extent we have covered MK's really impressive by-election results, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, but also in Mpumalanga, where they've been taking very significant chunks of the vote off of the ANC and the EFF, and to a lesser extent, the IFP. And so Zuma is really in the box seat to upset this election. And so the ANC has also tried another strategy rather than just beating them at the ballot box. They've tried to beat them out of the election in the courts. They have two cases. Well, they had two. Now they have one ongoing. And honestly, as you listen to this, because we're recording this on Wednesday, as you listen to this on Thursday, we might have the result in the other one. But they're two court cases. The first court case was challenging the registration of the MK party in the first place. The ANC claimed that the MK party had not registered properly with the Independent Electoral Commission and therefore should be deregistered, disbarred, and dismantled, removed from the ballot on the 29th of May. The second court case was about logo representation and trademark. Essentially, arguing, because the MK party has been using pretty much the same symbolism, imagery, logo of the old military wing of the ANC, the Umkhonto weSizwe, the original one. And the ANC's argument was, firstly, that it's their property, it's their trademark, even though they only applied for trademark of those logos after the MK party formed that last year in September. They were basically claiming that they had a historic kind of implicit trademark ownership of the logo. Secondly, the ANC is arguing that some voters could get confused when they see the MK party logo and think that it is the ANC, and for that reason, the MK party should be forced to stop using that logo and that symbolism. So that's the case that's still ongoing. And by the time you hear this episode, you may actually have, like, the country may have a resolution to that court case. But the first one is now done, and it went really badly for the ANC. Here essentially is what was going on. The MK party, when it first formed, as with all new parties, had to provide a stack of signatures of people supporting the formation of the party and its registration with the IEC to basically show the IEC that this is a real formation with real support that deserves to be on the ballot. And the IEC, after receiving that initial application from the MK party, responded to them in a letter where they said some of these signatures are fraudulent, or they don't check out, or they don't represent real people. You need to go again, essentially, and you need to get us all real legit signatures. And that's what the MK party did. They submitted further documentation with further legit signatures to prove that their application was fine and passable and admissible by the IEC. And they basically supplemented the application. They fixed their original one, and the IEC accepted it as good, fine, and proper. And the MK party was registered. This was all last year. I'm sure you're wondering, like, what is the ANC trying to peddle now? Well, the ANC decided that they were going to take this matter to court, arguing that the MK party had to create a new application, not supplement their old original application, and the new application with all the legit signatures had to be considered. And because the MK party didn't do that, they should be struck from the ballot. The ANC essentially tried to argue on an extreme language technicality that because the word supplement wasn't in the IEC's kind of like foundational documents and their legal principles, their organizational principles, that it essentially meant that the IEC has to get brand new applications from parties who are trying again. They can't supplement their old ones. Now, the courts and the IEC took an extremely dim view of this argument from the African National Congress. They said, okay, cool, maybe the word supplement isn't exactly in there, but there is nothing in our foundational documents or transcripts saying that you have to start a brand new application, especially because what would the point be? Like, what meaningfully is the difference between the old application with more documents to supplement it, to complete it, to fix it, and a new application which is exactly the same, you just basically opened a new email and submitted a new attachment of the whole project. And so they threw the ANC's argument out. But they also went in on the ANC for being irrational, and I think they were implying, let's just say, not in the spirit of the game. Because they said, ANC, why didn't you object to the IEC registering the MK party last year in September? In fact, there's actually a built-in deadline. There's a period in which people can and organizations can object to the registration of others if they think there are problems, which the ANC did not. They didn't object before the deadline. And I said, why, ANC, did you not object within the deadline? And the ANC came on some, oh, but you know, we only decided to challenge it later in the year. And then it was November, and it took us a month to get our legal team together, because that's, I mean, they only contested this registration on like the 26th of December, which is the day after Christmas or two. I always mess this up. Do you always mess this up? Is it the 24th or the 25th Christmas? Anyway, it was the 26th. It was like a day or 2 days after Christmas. Of course, the IEC's offices are closed. The whole country is closed. The IEC's offices closed on the 23rd of December. What took the ANC so long? And the ANC were essentially trying to say, oh, we were trying to, you know, get our ducks in a row. But I think, you know, okay, so let me actually just tell me what the court said. What the court says, because we don't have to think very far. The IEC and the court just said, that's irrational. That makes no sense. Get out. And they use the word irrational, which is a hard, harsh, heavy word to use. And in their question of why ANC did you take so long, I think was the answer, which we all understand to be true, which is the ANC didn't care about this party's registration until Umsholozi Jacob Zuma himself, on the 16th of December, announced that he would try to destroy the ANC, although he kind of called it save the ANC through going outside of them and then destroying them, and called the ANC leadership apartheid collaborators and sellouts, apartheid sellouts and capitalistic collaborators or whatever. Both awful things, the worst thing you can say about an ANC leadership in the ANC's context. After that, they were like, let's try and destroy this party. And so MK is going to be on the ballot. We don't know if they'll be able to or allowed to use the logos, the images, the symbolism of the Old Mkhonto we Sizwe as they have been using them. But MK is going to be on the ballot and people are going to vote for them. All right, let's get to the second big and massively important story. It was kind of annoying, like kind of heads in hands frustrating last week Thursday for us when we released our last News Worth Knowing Thursday episode of The Issue, because if you listen to it, we spoke about Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula at length, the National Assembly Speaker of the ANC, who's been at the top level of government for like 2 decades, about all the bribery allegations against her from her time as Minister of Defense and military veterans. We spoke about all of that. And we spoke about the raid, and then we finished recording, and then we finished editing, and then we published the episode, and then like 4 minutes later, the Mail and Guardian said, oh, she's being arrested tomorrow. Oh, I'm sure you can imagine how annoying, how frustrating that was for us, how that felt. Look, if you've been in broadcasting or if you've been in, you know, content creation or like video reporting, audio reporting of any kind, you'll know how that feels. It's like all that work we did. If you'd announced that 6 hours before Mail and Guardian, we could have updated and been relevant and hot. But thankfully, a lot of people did go and check out that episode and listen to it and watch it because, you know, they wanted to know about Nosiviwe and what was going on. So maybe it wasn't that bad. But yeah, the frustration was real. Okay, anyway. And go back and listen to it and watch it if you want to learn about the fullness of the allegations against Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula. The fourth most powerful person, technically, in South Africa, by the way. Fourth in line to the throne. As in, she's fourth in line to be president. So if president or vice president is sick, there's one other position, and then it's her to be the president of South Africa. Nobody has ever, while holding such a high office, been arrested ever in modern South Africa. So we finished that episode, and then the Mail and Guardian said that she was going to be arrested as a consequence of the raid and the investigations by the Hawks. She was going to be arrested on Friday. And then we sat and waited. And on Friday morning, a bunch of different news outlets did claim, oh, she's going to be arrested at some point today. But what was quite extraordinary was UDM leader and, you know, political veteran Bantu Holomisa, South Africa's favorite fisherman.
You teach him to fish. You give him, no.
He went on Twitter, X, he tweeted, posted, X, I don't know, whatever, that she had already been arrested, that she was at Pretoria Central Prison at 8 a.m. He was tweeting this at like 8:01, and then he went on a bunch of radio stations and said exactly the same thing. So then there was enormous confusion, because Nosiviwe's camp, Nqakula's people said, no, she hasn't. She hasn't been arrested. She's fine. And then everybody rushed and like staked out her house. Like there were vans and, you know, there was media outside and there was no much movement inside. And apparently she wasn't there. And then your South Africa is an insane place. You know, Gavin Watson, the infamous criminal who died in what many people say is questionable circumstances. There are many conspiracy theories in the same camp as Marcus Huster about, did he really die? Like it does seem to be that as soon as very powerful white men are about to go to jail for bad fraud, corruption, and criminality, they don't quite make it to jail, and maybe they're all on an island somewhere. There's no evidence of that, but South Africans love that conspiracy. So Gavin Watson's son arrived on Friday at Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula's house. What was he doing there? Well, it kind of turns out that the Watsons are friends with the Mapisa-Nqakulas, which is not a ringing endorsement for either family. So Gavin Watson's grown son went inside, frittled around a little bit, came out and said, oh no, everything's fine, and then left. Had a young little quick spokesperson role for the Mapisa-Nqakula family. So that was bizarre. That was really like whoever's writing the script is not doing a good job. Maybe it's ChatGPT just throwing together people of interest from different stories. And then it became clear that the NPA never, the National Prosecuting Authority, never intended to arrest Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula around that time. They had not attempted to arrest her. None of that had happened. What had happened was she'd been given a court summons, because what a lot of people maybe don't know is that when you are not being arrested, like in the moment for doing something in front of the police, if you are the subject of a long running investigation and they decide to lay down charges against you, you're invited to come and receive your charges. They don't want to arrest you. They don't want to embarrass you or humiliate you, drag you out in front of the street, in front of your neighbors, and haul you in front of the national media. They invite you to come. And actually, as per the policing regulations, arrest is actually the last resort. If you just won't come, then they will arrest you in such a circumstance. And so it turns out that the NPA had essentially issued a summons and said, pull through, Nosevebe Mapisa Nqakula, we're going to charge you, pull through. And she decided not to. So no one really knows for sure where the Mail and Guardian got the information that it would be on Friday. Nobody can talk about, no one can say what happened with Bantu Olomisa. Maybe she was going to be arrested on Friday and MG really did find that out, and then plans changed. Maybe, it's very possible. These kind of things can happen. It's not beyond the realms of imagining or actually happening. But what was really extraordinary was, it was so extraordinary. Mapisa Nqakula, through her representatives on Friday even, demanded to see the case that the NPA had against her. She said, show me, because I think you've got a weak case and it's not deserving of arresting me and charging me. Which is just like, how powerful, how above the law, how at removed from the real world you have to be to, in the face of being arrested, go, prove it. Show me. Like, if you were walking down the street having recently been in a 7-Eleven and a police van drives past and they know the 7-Eleven's been robbed and they think it was you and they stop and they tell you to get in the van, you don't, as a normal everyday South African, we mere mortals, we mere plebs, everyday commoners in South Africa, don't get to say, prove it, show me the security tapes before I get in the van. You're getting in the van. But Nosevebe Mapisa Nqakula is of a world where she doesn't get treated like that. It's on her terms. The law has to negotiate with her if they want some of her precious time and attention, which is just like, South Africans were stunned. Our jaws were on the floor in total disbelief at the audacity of this behavior. And then all of the other classic spins started that we have seen from so many politicians over the years. Nosevebe Mapisa Nqakula said that the NPA was trying to embarrass her and humiliate her, that they were using apartheid tactics, that they were trying to influence in the election, all without any basis or factual evidence. The classics, the big hitters, the ones that always chart, that we've seen hit the top 40s before if they were songs. And speaking of songs, she also did try to do what I now call the shake it off. Thank you, Taylor Swift, but it's the Shabir shake it off. I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake it off, shake it off. You know, she tried to claim, as Shabir Sheikh has done, you know, with his medical parole, I'm definitely about to die, please release me from jail. And then they do, and then he plays golf and lives for a long time. And the Jacob Zuma medical parole from a few years ago when he was in jail and he said, oh, I'm so sick. So sick and old. I'm on my last legs. I'm on the way out. And now he's dancing and cavorting on stage for MK. I'm only laughing because it's so absurd. He's like, you know, perfectly fit, unbelievably good shape for an 81-year-old. Does whatever meds he got, whatever miracle he drugs he got, give me the number of his doctor. Because, I mean, you could survive a terminal illness with whatever he was given. But Nosevebe played the same thing. She tried to shake it off. Shabir shake off the attempts to bring her to justice by saying, oh, but you know, I'm a senior citizen. I can't go to jail. It'll affect my health. I'm so old. What if I get sick? I can't go to jail. To which, once again, South Africa went, who cares? You did something wrong. You have to face the charges. You have to face the might of the law and the evidence. The South Africa is trying to come back to being a country where that actually are consequences. There are consequences for powerful people. The NPA has made some really impressive arrests recently and done some real good work. Like, you've got to face the music. And also, Nosevebe Mapisa Nqakula, you're 67 and you've never had a problem with your health or age with all the work that you have been doing until now. In fact, Nosevebe Mapisa Nqakula was scheduled last week to fly to Geneva, Switzerland to head up a delegation of the South African government. So which one is it? Are you too sick and frail to just sit in jail, but you're lekker to get on a plane and fly to Europe? Anyway, throughout all the big hitters, annoyed many people, including me, as I'm sure you've noticed, tremendously. And now we're in this absurd situation where Nosavima Mapisa Ngalkula's legal representation has taken this to court to try to like interdict the NPA from arresting her. Again, this proven thing of, oh, you probably have a weak case. We think you have a weak case. How dare you try to arrest us? Which is not how the legal system works. It's just not. And in it are all these things. Oh, apartheid tactics, attempts to humiliate, all these things. And in response, the NPA, which has taken up the case, writes, they're fighting back, which is a pretty clear indication that the NPA does intend to arrest her. They have taken up the case against Mapisa Ngakula's application to the court to say the things I've already said. One, arrest is the last resort. We just offered you a summons. You should just pull through. It's not that deep or that complicated. If you don't, we will arrest you because you're a South African citizen and all the things. Two, no factual evidence of humiliation or anything like that. But three, as the MPA rightly pointed out, since when do people charged with crimes that have enough evidence for the MPA to actually open a case, since when do they get to negotiate on their terms and feels with the National Prosecuting Authority? That is absurd. You can't have a justice system that works like that. We don't. Nobody has a justice system that works like that. And then Mapisa Ngakula's legal representation said, no, but like we want this court case held until the 3rd of April because Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula's first choice lawyer is indisposed or pre-booked or whatever. He's doing other work until the 3rd of April in case then, and then he'll come represent her. To which again, the MP was like, what? No, why are you saying we should wait for your favorite lawyer? What an absurd notion. Again, imagine this happened. If you got arrested by SAPS and you said, no, you can't. I'm waiting for my lawyer and he's only available next week. And the NPA also made another very good point, which is that Mapisa Ngakula's not been charged yet because she didn't rock up. And so she's not entitled to legal representation of any form. She's just choosing to take this court case. Only once a South African is charged can they really demand non-negotiably to have legal representation. So the whole thing is a circus. Mapisa Ngakula also decided to take what she called special leave from her role as National Assembly Speaker. Special leave is not a thing. Special leave you get if you're like a government employee in the traditional sense, like you're a civil servant, like no matter which political party is in power, you're employed, you do your job. There's no such thing as special leave for the National Assembly Speaker. If you want to take some leave, temporary leave, you have to pass a resolution in the National Assembly to take leave as National Assembly Speaker. So the whole thing is absurd. The court essentially said that they will rule around like April 2 after the Easter long weekend. We'll have a resolution on April 2, we hope. Mapisa Ngakula is not going to be arrested before then. But like, what an absolute circus. All right, the last story we need to talk about is as important, in my opinion, as these other two, although these other two are unbelievably important for different reasons. It involves EduCore. If you don't know, and I think many people didn't know about EduCore before this breaking news, EduCore is a massive private higher education provider. They run a bunch of titles, campuses, brands that you will know, like Damlin College, City Varsity, Lyceum. They account for tens of thousands of students in South Africa, their educations every single year. Some of the institutions are cheaper, and some are more expensive than the average university course or education. And some of these colleges provide kind of standard traditional classic higher education things like accounting or law. And others provide more niche things that universities don't do yet or may never do in South Africa, like, you know, sound or certain kinds of film school, that kind of thing. So kind of extraordinarily, earlier this week, the Department of Higher Education, led by Bladen Zamanda, announced that EduCore would be forced to close all of their campuses, tens of thousands of students. Devastating, shocking, traumatizing, destabilizing for all these students who are in EduCore institutions right now. Some of them are first years a few months in. Some of them are in their third year of their three-year degree or their third year of their fourth year degree or their second of their third, whatever it is. Unbelievably shocking, terrifying, nerve-wracking. And the reason why is that it seems as though EduCore has been in some financially dire straits for a few years. There have been allegations of corruption around them. And most importantly for the Department of Higher Education, they haven't submitted their financial balance sheets for 2021 or 2022. And even now in 2024, like a year or two later of begging and pleading and negotiations and moderations between EduCore and the Department of Higher Education, they still haven't. And so now you're probably thinking, okay, but Dan, why do they need to hand over their financial statements to do their jobs, to teach, to be open and running and have their, you know, teaching licenses? Well, the simple reason is that education is a fundamental human right. And just like healthcare, private education is very, very strictly regulated by the government, because the government needs to make sure that if you are in private education or private healthcare, that you are being looked after, that you are getting your rights and needs met, seen to, and respected. And so crucially, particularly in education, where when you're teaching somebody for multiple years, they're entrusting you with their futures, they're entrusting you with education to the point of a degree that could change their life. Particularly in South Africa, a degree can change the life and fortunes of your entire future, that of your family, the jobs you could get, the kind of life you could lead. The Department of Higher Education takes very seriously that you're running a sustainable business, that you are in line with the law and not breaking any, that you are making profit or at least not making such a loss that your business is under threat, because they don't want to allow any private institution through mismanagement or malpractice to throw students' lives into jeopardy. Particularly vulnerable students, because you know for sure that many, many, many students are first generation in higher education institutions in South Africa. Sometimes they're only there by the grace of an entire community, extended family or neighborhood of people who've collected money together to send them to varsity to get a life-changing degree. Particularly because you know that there aren't that many higher education institutions in South Africa. And frankly, there are not enough for all the people who finish matric and then want to pursue higher education. So these private education institutions are unbelievably important and have an unbelievably significant role in the lives of tens of thousands of students. And so the Department of Higher Education has tried to very seriously take on their mandate of making sure that these big institutions actually are basically acting right by their students and acting right by their own books, so that they can continue to provide solid education to the young South Africans whose futures they've been entrusted with, to be honest. And so EduCorps is in crisis, and they refused to show the government that they were for years, and they've had potential corruption rumors and allegations swirling around them. And so the government has said, we're beyond any point of settlement or agreement or redemption. You have to close. All of these colleges, I think it's over 40 campuses, tens of thousands of students, you have to close. And it is shocking and devastating for so many reasons. So just to start at the start, in case you're immediately worrying about students who are halfway through their degrees, the government has ordered EduCorps to have a phase-out approach where they help the students currently on their books to the end of their degrees, and they don't accept any new students, and then they close. Now, at least that is helpful, because students who've started the road can end the road. But can you imagine how destabilizing that will be, how hard that degree will be, how maybe devalued that degree will be by the fact that you're literally sitting in the hallways of a dying place that essentially is closed? Like, teachers will probably be trying to leave. Administrators also seeking jobs elsewhere. They'll be distracted. Resources will be cut off to things that you really need to complete your degree when you're in class and on field trips or any kind of coursework. It's a shocking, awful, regrettable situation, and so terrible for all of those students. And of course, provisions are being made if students want to transfer to different institutions, but that is way easier said than done, because think about it. Many of these colleges have certain degrees that would not necessarily be recognized, or they wouldn't be equivalent courses to give students credit for if they went to different institutions. I mean, I remember moving between two universities in second year, I went to Rhodes for a bit. I came back with a journalism one completion, first year completion. UCT at the time didn't have an equivalent journalism first year course, so I got a media first year course. And I was lucky, because those weren't perfect fits, perfectly transferable matches. Imagine if you're at a college right now, a Damlin or a City Varsity, and there just aren't any colleges nearby or around which have the same kind of courses or will recognize your courses as credits for theirs. You just lose a ton of time. Secondly, on the time and the money, because it is possible that maybe EduCorps will be forced to reimburse some students, particularly ones who've just started in first year. But you know full well from hearing stories about NISFAS and plenty of other horror stories how long it takes to get reimbursed by any massive institution, even if you've just left a job there, or if you're trying to get like medical health to reimburse you for a procedure. Like, that takes a long time. And in that limbo, these students are being absolutely screwed over at a crucial moment in their lives. Thirdly, it's not that easy to just go to another institution, even if you do get the immediate reimbursement and there is another institution that has the equivalent transfer course that you could get a credit in, so you don't have to start again from the beginning of first year, because it's tough being a student, Maybe you've paid for accommodation in a particular area or budgeted a certain amount of money of all your money for transport to that particular college. Or maybe you've lived near the college and picked up a part-time job so that you can pay for living costs or expenses or the actual courses themselves. And now you need to move to another college in a different area where maybe you won't be able to get your money back from that accommodation or find a new accommodation that's affordable. You won't be able to find a part-time job or travel to that one. You might not even be able to easily afford the transport to go to the new place. It is a horror show situation. And in the extreme circumstance, there may not be another college in your area that you can even reach or afford to go to. Because maybe that college is far away, the one college where you could go to instead of the one that you're at. And you can't afford the transport and it's an expensive area to live and there's no part-time jobs. This is such a mega disaster. And it's one of those horror situations where like people talk about the concept of too big to fail. Like maybe EduCourt just should have got bailed out by the government so they could keep doing what they were doing because we have such a lack of accessible and decently run higher education institutions that can provide higher learning and degrees to South Africans right now, and so many South Africans who need it once they complete matric. Like maybe EduCourt should have just been saved. But at the same time, we can't allow this kind of thing to happen because when companies are too big to fail, then they can take advantage, they can take liberties, they can break laws, and they can run at losses, and they can basically look at the government and say, you have to fix us whether you like it or not, so fix us while we continue to work towards our own interests. And so it's just such a disastrous situation. My heart goes out to all of these tens of thousands of students. I hope that every single one of them gets their degree as easily and painlessly as possible or gets a new way to study somewhere else. But it does highlight this collapse of EduCourt. What a mess we are in that an institution which runs like 40 campuses can collapse. And that really does mean that hundreds of thousands of students in the next 10 years or 20 years may not have anywhere to go after school. There's not enough seats or desks or spaces at the universities and colleges that exist in South Africa. There may really be nowhere to go. And it is just so horrifying that we essentially now have to pray that another private education company somehow steps in and fills this absolutely enormous gap, or that EduCourt gets bought out and the new ownership means that they can reapply for government registration or permits to be able to teach. It's really a horror show. And I hope that it's something that more people speak about, because we do have a problem in this country that when students face awful things like NSFAS, the adults don't, like the big adults, the 35 and above's who write the media stories and control the media houses and are in politics and business, they don't care. And they don't make it enough of a problem, which really does need to change. Right, that's The Issue with Dan Korda, this Thursday edition of News Worth Knowing. I hope that you have a beautiful long weekend, however you choose to celebrate it, whether it's religious or whether it's just with family. And we'll see you again on Monday. Even though it's a public holiday, it's family day. We'll see you then. Cheers.